For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Support for the morning show also comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering an online master's degree in healthcare administration. Learn the skills necessary to be a leader in the complicated healthcare world. Details at uwp.edu. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today is the monthly visit of Nan Calvert, and it's always great to have Nan Calvert joining us from Root Pike Wind to offer up an interesting topic related to the world around us and the health of our environment. And she has really hit a winner today. That is, she has invited a guest who is going to be a very, very interesting person to talk to. His name is Tom Marrero, and he is one of the co-owners of a business called Wakefield Biochar. And biochar is what we are going to talk about today. And first of all, we welcome both of you. Nan, explain how you first came across Tom Marrero.
Sure. Good morning, everybody, and thanks for having us again, Greg. This is wonderful. Not too long ago, toward the end of 2018, Dave Giordano, who's the executive director of Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, was very excited about something called biochar, and he had mentioned it a number of times, and he wanted to get Tom Marrero up here to talk to people about it because it really is, it's very important what Tom does, and it has far-reaching, very positively impactful consequences, shall we say. So I arranged for Tom to do a webinar for the Southeastern Wisconsin Clean Water Network and was hoping that I could get Tom on the radio at some point in time. And here he is, and he even drove up from Illinois.
Yay.
Yay.
We appreciate you making the time. So we're going to be talking about this thing called biochar, which is something that can be applied to soil to make it better, to make it healthier. And just ahead of us digging into that, Nan, I want you to remind our listeners why we need to be talking about soil and not talking about dirt.
Right. So we have to kind of change the way we regard soil. We have to, because, you know, words have power. Soil is that thing that is the source of life here on Earth. It's where our food grows. And when you have healthy soil, you also have healthy plant communities, native plant communities. You also have healthy food crop communities. And then you have healthy watersheds as well, but we tend to call it dirt, and that's you know, that kind of devalues what it is. So I'm encouraging everybody to stop calling it dirt and call it soil. Remember, it's full of wonderful, amazing living things, and it's comprised of all manner of things. And so we need to bump up our regard for soil. And what Tom does, and what Wakefield Biochar produces, is for the health of our soil and then all of the things that come from soil.
Very good. So I think it's helpful for us in this conversation about this thing called biochar to begin with that understanding that soil is sort of a complicated living organism in a sense.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's not just the stuff under your fingernails. Mm-hmm. That's dirt. That's right. But this other thing in which we grow the things that sustain us come from soil. Mm-hmm. And soil can have all kinds of issues. Maybe, Nan, just say a quick word about the problems that soil can experience or develop.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens, of course, is that erosion is a huge problem because we have so many areas of denuded soil. In other words, there aren't the right kinds of plants in the right number to keep it where it's supposed to be. So when you think of farm fields that are left fallow and they don't have cover crops, you may not see the erosion happening, but like, for example, today when we have these gale force winds, a lot of soil particles are picked up and blown all over the place. They're often deposited where, you know, we're supposed to have really high quality water, and that causes siltification and a whole number of other things. And then, of course, you know, what we do to the soil makes a big difference. So soil has structure. So there's soil compaction, and sometimes, you know, we ruin the soil structure by getting it into it too early when it's still too cold and it's too wet. We tend to put things on it that kill off the flora, if you will, that live in there. So, yeah, you know, we're not taught how to regard soil. We're not really taught what it is, but now is the time for that to dawn on us so we can take care of it.
Very good. Well, let's bring in Tom Herrero and first of all find out a little bit about where you are from and how in the world you became interested in this thing called biochar. It sounds like that actually happened years before you and your brother began this company about 5 years ago. So first of all, tell us a little bit about where you come from and a little bit about where this sort of general interest of yours came from.
Great. Well, thanks again to Nan and Greg for inviting me. I really appreciate it, and I'm really excited to be here. You know, biochar, the actual what biochar is, has been around for thousands of years. The Egyptians used it 5,000 years ago. They created biochar, but more for these gases that come off, and they would actually condense into oils for embalming. A couple thousand years ago, there were civilizations along the Amazon River where they found if they were to create biochar and put it in the soil of the rainforest, they could grow better crops, and so they could have millions of people along the Amazon. Unfortunately, explorers came along, brought in diseases, and killed the people, but the plants still stayed. Hmm. So it's been around for a long time. For me personally, I wanted to get a PhD in chemistry. I had a very strong environmental focus in what I wanted to do. And I actually happened to it was a father of a friend of mine from high school who was a professor at the University of Missouri. His name is Stanley Manahan, who is really the grandfather of environmental chemistry. And he was doing research with biochar and coal-based chars to look at how you treat radioactive waste and how you prevent those things from getting into groundwater and getting into the soils. And so we were really the first group to use the term biochar in a research paper back in the 90s. So that's out of University of Missouri. And that's really what ignited my realization that there is something out there that's very environmentally sustainable that could be used for so many purposes. And as I've come along, I've realized there's a huge use for soil health that was beyond just the issues of remediation that wasn't even on my mind at the time. Hmm. And the company was started about 5 years ago. My father was a professor in chemical engineering at the University of Missouri, and he did a lot of green engineering work, and he was about to retire, so my twin brother and I decided that he needed a job because you don't want to have a retired professor doing nothing because that's a bad idea. And so we started Wakefield Biochar, and it really was like, wait, this is a really good idea. Unfortunately, my father passed away a few months later with cancer, but Tony and I decided, you know, let's keep this business going. Let's do something with it. Let's educate, for one, and that was part of the pillar from our father and our educational background, and then let's see if we can make a go of it.
Mm-hmm. And this is great. And so we're talking about something that's actually an ancient practice that, in a sense, has been recently, in a sense, rediscovered. I mean, not that it was ever completely forgotten or completely obscured, but we have this new interest in this thing called biochar and are starting to do it in a sense in a more concerted fashion.
There is a reawakening, and I think the issues of global warming have brought it to the forefront. Like, we are starting as a population trying to figure out how can we do things better and how can we maybe have a part of preventing climate change and global warming. And biochar itself is actually a carbon negative process. And because of that, we're actually reducing greenhouse gases when we make biochar. And it's a really neat concept when you start to think about it, because we take biomass. We take a living plant that was actually going to become a waste, you know, wood waste, agricultural waste. And those things, if left alone, like the old joke is what happens when a tree falls in the forest? Mm. Well, it actually decomposes, becomes methane and CO2, and goes into the atmosphere. And some of it goes into the soil. But this part that goes in the atmosphere, we're stopping that by converting that wood or that agricultural residue into a char that doesn't decompose. Mm. It's really neat.
So we're talking today on The Morning Show not only with Nan Calvert, but with Tom Marrero, who with his twin brother owns a business called Wakefield Biochar, and they produce this thing called biochar, which now we should spell out as kind of a definition so people have an even better idea of what we are talking about. You brought a little bag of biochar for me, and it's really fun to kind of take a look at this. And it's a bag of black stuff that if you don't look really closely, it might be a bag of wild rice, you know, those but with really small kernels, or it looks like maybe charcoal that has been pulverized, so it's almost more like a dust. When I read up on biochar, the first line of the article talked about when charcoal is used as a soil amendment, but that's one of the first things you want to clarify for us, is that although this looks like charcoal, we're not talking exactly about charcoal.
Right. And I think that the difference when you say charcoal, the word coal to me, it's a fuel. That means it's meant for burning and producing heat. Biochar is not meant to burn and produce heat. Biochar is meant to be a soil amendment. It's meant to be something used for remediation. It's meant to be more like a low-grade activated carbon than it is to be a fuel. So charcoal itself has got a lot of oils in it that are meant for fuel purposes, not for plant growth. And so you can actually poison your plants by using charcoal. If you have a properly produced biochar, it doesn't have those oils in it, and so it's not phytotoxic. And so that way you can have a healthy garden, healthy lawn, healthy trees, as opposed to putting in organics and material that potentially could be toxic to it. So that's the big difference. It's not what you find at the bottom of your Weber grill or your fire pit.
Right. That's an important distinction for us to make. Although we could say that it's somewhat related to that.
Yes.
I mean, it's in kind of the same arena, but there are differences which are really crucial differences. So what exactly are the building blocks of biochar? I mean, what are the ingredients that comprise it, and how is it created?
So across the nation, the primary ingredient for biochar is going to be a wood. Usually it's wood waste or wood that's been going to be mulched, and people will use that as the main building block. But biochar, by definition, has to be from a biomass, so something that was – it's not a tire. It's not treated wood, really. You can't do that. It's not metals. It's a tree. It's plants. It's something that was a living plant that is now going to be converted into a char. So that's the basic thing. Then we take that material and we put it, we don't burn it, because burning means oxygen to me. We pyrolyze it or we gasify it. But pyrolyzation is really, it's heating without oxygen. So when you remove oxygen from a heat source, from an area, and you just have pure heat going into to the tree, you maintain that carbon. It doesn't combust. It doesn't go into a gas. So you have a majority of that carbon stays locked in, and it actually converts to a very porous, almost like a sponge, looking complex or material. And that becomes biochar. What comes off when you heat it is there is methane and some hydrogen, and there's water and things that come out. But the gases can be recirculated into the system for heat. So you're actually very efficient in how you deal with that. So we're really the best pyrolysis systems in the country are already US EPA certified as non-incineration. You can put it there is one basically right in the middle of San Francisco. And if you can get something in the middle of San Francisco to do pyrolysis, you know that you're meeting pretty heavy regulatory requirements for air emissions, right? So,
in other words, you could have a plant that has this process of pyrolysis and you don't have stuff going into the air through a smokestack.
Correct.
I mean, it just doesn't create that because of the process.
Right.
And so all that's involved is, I guess, what's called biomass. Mm-hmm. And that would be dead trees or dead lettuce or whatever we're talking about.
Right.
And then this special kind of heating process is applied to it, and what results is biochar. How long does it take? How long does that material have to be heated before it turns into this thing called biochar?
There are different types of pyrolysis type systems, slow and fast, and but in general, it's anywhere from a minute to 15 minutes. That doesn't take long. The temperatures will range anywhere from 300 degrees Celsius to 1,000 degrees Celsius. Most people will do pyrolysis around 500 degrees Celsius, which is pretty hot. You know, you're actually one of the neat things, because people will talk about, well, what are you putting into your soil? Especially if you don't want to put in pesticides or organics, pharmaceutical waste, things like that that might be in the environment traditionally. When you pyrolyze something, you destroy all that. All that gets converted into a carbon base, and everything else would be pushed off as a methane or a hydrogen gas that's reused. So it actually purifies it. That biochar that you have, Greg, is actually fairly sterile. You know, you can eat it. Hmm. You can feed it to chickens. You can, you know, it's really, it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. Now, I don't personally don't eat it, but you know, you can eat it. But it's a
I would not be poisoning myself if I ate this. Okay.
Right. Yeah, it'll be a little crunchy. Yeah.
When this process is done, what does it look like? Does it look like this bag that you've given me that almost seems like coal dust? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what it just looks like, or does it come off and in bigger chunks that you have to do something to?
It depends on the system that you use, but you can have large chunk biochar, and you have to make sure that it's charred all the way through. If not, you have a char-coated piece of wood, which is kind of interesting. Or you can have very fine powders, which we actually do the gambit of it. These fine powders can get as small that where you can actually spray them through a nozzle.
Wow.
And you can mix them and spray them. So you can, like arborists may want to do air spading, where they put it into the ground through a nozzle and a spray. And you can do all that. So it does go in various sizes, and that's really neat on how you can apply it. Maybe you're dealing with water, Dan, and you want to have a stream of water go through the biochar like a filter system in your fish tank. Well, you don't want to have a very fine powder that clogs up and causes a lot of back pressure. So maybe a chunk biochar is a good idea, because it doesn't inhibit the flow of the water as much, and you still get the benefits of it.
Hmm. So I think it would be interesting for us to understand, without getting too terribly technical, about what the processes are that whereby this improvement of soil health occurs.
Yeah.
So when you apply biochar to soil, what's going on that improves the health of the soil?
So that's a great question. And that's one of the things I try to tell people is, think of biochar as the coral reef of the ocean, right? Biochar is the structure that brings life. That coral reef brings life. So biochar in itself, it's not a fertilizer, so it's not really providing nutrition to the soil. But what it does do, because it's extremely porous and it's a good carbon source, what happens is it creates this area for microbes to live, you know, for those animals to get a safe place to live that's a solid structure that's not going to decompose. And so one of the biggest things that I think biochar does better than anything, better than any soil amendment you can find, is that it increases microbial life in your soil. And when you increase the life of your soil that's in there, you increase its ability to convert nutrients to food for plants. You just increase the quality of that soil. And so that is a huge component to biochar, is because it's extremely porous. Like that biochar is 375 meters squared per gram, which is a lot. You know, it's a lot of surface area. You have a lot of spaces for beneficial microbes to grow and live. And that's one of the things we're lacking, because people, when you put down your herbicides and your pesticides, you're killing the life of your soil. So you may be killing the bugs on the surface, but you're also killing the beneficial microbes in the soil. Mm. And that's the part that we try to educate people on, is like, first, if you get a healthy plant, generally the bugs don't want those. They're going to go after the weak ones. And so have a healthy soil, you have healthy plants, and you have less issues with those sorts of things. The other thing it does is it holds water well. It holds up to 6 times its weight in water. So there's been many studies that show not only does it hold water, but it makes it more available to the plants. So the plant available water increases. It aerates the soil because it is so porous. So if you have compacted soil, it helps aerate it, which allows for better percolation of the water, better root growth, better use of the earthworms and everything else that's in there that you want. So it's a good thing for that. And another major part where people, if you think about your pocketbook, is that it makes your fertilizers or your nutritional sources more efficient because it'll actually hold in the nitrogen and the phosphorus and the potassiums in the soil. It doesn't let them leach away. It doesn't lock it in. It allows it so that the microbes can convert that to food for the roots that goes to the plants and everything works as a nice system. So you're becoming more efficient with your fertilizers and you're preventing those fertilizers from washing away on those big heavy rains and going into the groundwater and hurting, you know, the Gulf Coast versus keeping that money you spent on that material, whether it's compost or something else, and keeping those nutrition, keeping that nutrition in the soil. Mm-hmm. And that's what biochar helps do as well.
Right. You're really preaching to the choir here in terms of NAN, because NAN, yeah. You love to talk about our environment as a system of systems of sorts. And mm-hmm. whenever we talk about anything systematically, we're making great progress.
Right, exactly. You know, every time I speak with Tom, I learn something. And so I had no idea that the gases were used for embalming, or the liquids were used.
Yeah,
for embalming.
they would condense those, and that it's basically like a wood vinegar can be produced, things like that. And so, this was thousands of years ago, but the Egyptians would use that for embalming. Yeah. So
one of the things that Tom and I talked about was, most of us, many of our listeners know that when you have a stand of garlic mustard, the garlic mustard destroys the mycorrhiza in the soil, and that is what makes that mycorrhiza, that micro community, is what makes woodland soil healthy. And so it takes a long time for soil to recover once you remove garlic mustard. But one thing that would be helpful in woodland remediation programs or might be a biochar application, because it helps reestablish that soil microbiotic community, and then native plants could become established more robustly and more quickly. So I hope there are people out there listening, like Sierra Club and Melissa Warner and all those people who are doing really good remediation projects, and maybe get in touch with Tom, because it's really something to consider.
Interesting. So in other words, when invasive plants get removed, it actually would be helpful to not just remove them, mm-hmm. but then apply something like biochar mm-hmm. that really helps the soil then be poised to, in a sense, recover, and whatever you replant there to do better.
And exactly. And as I understand it, the structure of biochar, because it does have so much surface area, it allows root structures to establish more quickly and more healthfully. What's not to like about biochar?
Right.
I agree.
In your unbiased opinion.
Yeah.
For those of you just joining us, we're speaking today not only with Nan Calvert, but with Tom Marrero, who is co-owner with his twin brother of Wakefield Biochar. So that's what we're talking about primarily today, this thing called biochar, which at a glance might look like charcoal, but it is not exactly charcoal. It's related to charcoal, but it is something that is created from wood waste and plant-based waste into this substance that can be applied to the soil and can have tremendous benefits in terms of making the soil healthier, allowing the soil to retain water better, and it has other ramifications that are important for us to talk about as well. So, Tom, typically, how is it applied?
There's really two basic ways that it's applied. It's a top dressing that you can use, where you can apply. We tend to recommend about a cubic foot of biochar for every 375 square feet. But the best use of it is if you can actually mix it into the soil and get it 4 to 6 inches deep. And that's where we would mix it in. And we recommend around a 5 to 10% by volume mixture of biochar, if you can do it. If not, over time, and it'll add up over time because it's not going anywhere. It's not decomposing like a compost would. It doesn't just stay in the soil. It will move and migrate as the soil frees and thaws, and you get all kinds of things happening in the ground. You'll see it migrate throughout the soil, so it does spread out over time. But I would want to say with that though, when people apply it, it's not a fertilizer. It's not a necessarily nutritional source, but it will make all those things better. But we do recommend you mix it with a compost or something else like that, but worm castings, something like that, before you were to put it on the soil or put it as a top dressing, just because that allows the biochar to get charged up. It's like a battery almost, right? It's got all this great space inside of it. I mean, there's almost 70% of its void space. It wants to fill that up with great stuff so it can give it back to the ground. And so if you can mix it with something like a compost first, then you start to fill that space up. You start to populate the coral reef, right? Mm. And so when you put it in, it's ready to go. If you don't, that's fine. But what will happen is it's going to fill up first, and then it's going to help out the soil better. So it's going to take a little bit of time of an equilibrium time. It's not bad. It's not, and I don't want to scare people off on that. It's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. But if you want immediate impact, you would mix it with a compost.
Right. So in other words, it's still a good thing, but it's not as good a thing.
Correct.
Than if it is combined with something. I suppose, because I was going to ask you about that. If, for instance, we're talking about a neglected patch of land in mm-hmm. the middle of a city, and you want to bring that soil back to life, you could apply biochar, and you're creating sort of the space for these microbes to live, but then those microbes have to come.
They do.
And then you have to sort of like wait for that to happen. And and when you combine it with compost, then it's like you are, in a sense, charging up that process.
Correct. And that's what we call the term charging. People will get confused. There's activated carbon, which means that the carbon has a lot of active sites on it. It has the ability to interact with things. And so that's just a basic pure carbon that has a lot of like thermally activated. But that's not charged. Charged means that it's been loaded up with all these great nutrients and loaded up with water and things like that. And so that's where you make the impact. You know, I was telling a story earlier about how we're working in St. Louis with some urban farming projects, and the soil there, it's in a low-income area, and they're trying to create a way for people to actually create like subsistence farming as well as be able to bring products to the farmer's market. But the soils are so bad, you don't want to sell the products that would grow from that soil. Hmm. So we're amending the soils with biochar because it's going to help protect the ground from, or the plants from absorbing some of the toxic metals and still give it the ability to grow healthy food.
Could you talk a little bit about the farmer from Texas who?
So we are never slow on what's happening in the world. I mean, the people are really engaging. And so we actually had a gentleman from outside of Houston, Texas. He's a hay farmer. And he had done a lot of research on his own, and he called us up. He's like, okay, so I'm ready to go with biochar. We're like, well, this is great. What do you do? He's like, well, I'm a hay farmer. He has a very large amount of acreage, but he's doing a test plot on 30 acres with biochar. And his opinion is that when you use biochar in the soil, he's going to save money on water because he doesn't have to water as much. And then he's also feels like he doesn't have to use as much fertilizer because he's good with that. But one of the big things that was happening around the Houston area is because of the hurricanes, there's getting a lot of excess of salt in the soil. And you can see that in the north as well with salt applications on roadsides and everything else. But he really felt like by adding biochar, all that salt that is really diminishing the growth of his hay will be sequestered and kept away from the hay, and he'll have a better yield. And he feels like he'll get a three-year return on investment for his stuff. So he's applied that, and we're anxiously watching him to see how it goes. But it was really a nice thing to happen, is to someone independently, without having to hear me on a radio, come and say, hey, I think I know what I need, and this is it. And biochar is the answer. I want to do it right. Don't want to use fertilizers. I don't want to use as much water, and I want to create a healthy hay product.
Fascinating. Yeah. So generally speaking, who right now is utilizing biochar? I mean, I'm guessing it's not so much farmers and maybe more landscapers and gardeners and that kind of thing. Is that typically the scale on which biochar is used?
The primary consumer is a landscaping company and a residential, like, gardener. That's what we see the predominant area. We're seeing an increase in interest and use by farmers, but not large-scale farming. It would be more for your higher-margin crops where they feel like they can do the short-term investment, because biochar in general is a little bit more expensive than compost. And so you have to think long-term, and that's difficult sometimes for people financially. So, but the people that have a higher margin, they can put in the biochar on their crops, and they're seeing more produce, and they're also seeing healthier soils, and all those things are happening. We are actually trying to work with arborists more. And I know here in Wisconsin, we're talking with some people about a lot of the tree issues along the interstates and issues of salt and all that. And so we're working to try to develop a way to apply it. And that's usually the hard part. Like, how do you mix it? How do you deal with it? Because it's so new in people's minds. How do you apply it to help protect the trees?
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
When you got to the station today, I think you'd very recently received some interesting news from New York State that you should share with our listeners.
You know, it was so nice to read. I have someone that I work with out in New York, and he said, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but New York State has a bill pending that requires the use of biochar for all landscape installations and maintenance. And I thought, wow, could you imagine all the state of New York requiring biochar? And there's so many good things for that. I mean, the soil is going to be healthier. There's going to be less issues of contaminated water in the area. The impact on the environment is going to be huge. And that's a great thing to hear. So we're really excited about that. We hope other states follow through with what New York is going to do.
And talking about environmental impact, I think one thing that we should return to that I think you've touched on briefly is the matter of how the use of biochar actually could at least conceivably have some impact on just overall carbon emissions and climate change, on kind of a global scale. So first of all, explain kind of the mechanics behind which something like biochar could make a positive difference with as huge a concern as that.
So when you look at the feedstock, the biomass that we start with, let's say you take a tree. That tree, if it's left alone, will decompose, and a lot of that actually does become gases. I mean, people don't think of it that way, but it actually, a lot of it does become gases. So when we convert it to biochar, we're really taking the carbon and fixing it so that it won't decompose and become gases. And so I usually try to do the math. Let's say you have a 20-pound bag of biochar and compost, and it's a 50-50 split. You know, so you have about 10 pounds of biochar. Well, really about 8 pounds of that is actually carbon. Okay, that's because there's biochar has some ash in it, it has other, you know, calcium and all this other great stuff. But let's say 8 pounds of that is actually carbon. Well, that 8 pounds of carbon will not become carbon dioxide or methane. And so when you convert that, that's actually about 30 pounds of CO2 that you've prevented from going into the atmosphere from your raised bed garden, right? When you do one raised bed garden with 1 cubic foot of biochar, you're preventing 30 pounds of carbon dioxide from being emitted into the atmosphere. And that's great, right? I think that, and then there's additional things that help impact that. Now you're going to have plants with maybe bigger roots. When they have bigger roots, the plants can grow a little bigger. They get a little greener. They have a little more chlorophyll. You get more CO2 removal and scrub from the atmosphere through photosynthesis, which helps out the soil because they get more energy to the soil, which gives more life to the microbes that live down there, and you get this great system. So you actually have additional add-on effects from using biochar.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Would it be possible to – I mean, it sounds like, in a sense, it's this sort of – inadvertent benefit. I mean, it's not what we're talking about in terms of cutting CO2 emissions. That was never, I would think, the main. I mean, that's certainly not what the Amazonians were thinking about, you know, 3,000 years ago.
Right.
But it happens to be this tremendous benefit. But it's kind of a byproduct, in a sense, peripheral to the initial goal. Is it possible that biochar will actually be used in other ways where the main point is to, in a sense, address climate change? Is that at least a theoretical possibility?
I think it is. I don't think it has to be in agriculture. I don't think it has to be in landscaping for that to happen. And one of the things that we're seeing is we're talking to larger companies that have strong sustainability objectives. And they're doing things that you wouldn't even imagine. I mean, it could be you know, making this, you know, lid for your coffee cup or something else where they just need a carbon source. But by encouraging the use of biochar as your carbon, we're seeing actually corporate America thinking, well, maybe I can get carbon credits if I use enough. Maybe I, and so you're starting to see this actually churn to where not only landscapers, but now corporate America that does manufacturing might be looking at working with things that might they might use carbon black for, but now they could use a biochar if it's done correctly and it meets their needs. So we do see this inadvertent, you know, benefit of the environmental impact because of people making conscious decisions to do things a little bit differently. And I think it's great. We used to always want to really sound the horn for the environmental part of biochar, you know, a number of years ago when we started, because we felt that's what would resonate with people. And unfortunately, that's not always what resonates with people. People just want to have a good product. They want to buy something that's going to do a good job. And so we realized we need to focus on quality control and making a good product so people want to buy it so they can use it. And so that's really where we've morphed into is like we know this Jedi mind trick. We know the environmental thing's happening. We just want you to use it and have good results, so use more of it.
Right. And then it just happens to have this great environmental benefit. And, of course, one would also hope that over time, even within the last 5 years, there's probably more of us who are more aware of some of these issues and concerns and might be time to start thinking about even trumpeting that again. It might make more of an impact now than it once did. Well, at any rate, it's terrific. What is the process wherever you are creating this biochar? I think one of your plants is down in Riverside, Illinois. Is that right?
I'm in Riverside. Actually, the plants are in Missouri and Alabama.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. No, I'm in Riverside, though.
Okay. So there are like truckloads of dead tree branches being brought to the plant? Or, I mean, or what's kind of the means?
So it's the best tree is the closest tree. We don't want to do any more freight than we have to. Mm. And so really we've been able to partner with some other organizations that are able to just do things really close. So the trees, a little fun fact, Missouri is, I think, the number one state in the country for hardwood mills. Hmm. And so I think they have well over 300 hardwood mills in Missouri. And that's all usually, you know, mom and pop type, smaller, for the majority of them are smaller family owned things. And so they don't really have the desire because they don't have the time to do a lot with their wood waste. So this is all being collected and brought to a central location in the middle of Missouri. And that's where we try to pyrolyze it and then and be able to sell it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you sell it all across the country then?
We do. We are very excited to say that e-commerce works. People are buying across the country from all parts and all different volumes, which is really great. So we're on Amazon and we do things on our website. But people are interested in biochar for all different kinds of reasons. You know, in the Northwest, it's they're actually tend to be more about larger agricultural needs. But you know, if you come to the southeast of the United States, where soils are pretty sandy, it's usually people just trying to get grass to grow in a different way, and you know, in a bad area that may be too sandy. So, or to increase the citrus crop that they have, you know, maybe they have some trees that they want to have a higher yield, and that it helps out quite a bit.
Wow.
So, we do. We're very lucky to say that we've sold, and all different types of people. We've sold to. If I can talk about the Department of Energy, the one story we have, we were approached by Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and they are great. I mean, they're doing a great service because they're actually using the biochar in the Marshall Islands. And if people kind of think back to the late 50s and 60s, there was a lot of nuclear weapons testing over the Marshall Islands. And unfortunately, there is radioactive materials still in the soils in the Marshall Islands. Mm. And so the Lawrence Livermore is actually doing, I think, a good thing, which is trying to clean up those soils and clean up that sand. And so they're using biochar in their well, they're within their second year of their testing, to show that it can actually remove or sequester that radioactive metal that's in those that sandy soil and increase the crops that are being grown so people don't have to ingest radioactive metals, which were put there by the U.S. government, and they can have a healthier life. And so it's really neat what people are trying to do with that and how they're moving forward with that.
Wow. Yeah. In more standard application, how often does this have to be applied, or is it recommended? I mean, is this something you need to do over and over and over and over again?
So if you're top dressing, you have to remember, we tend to say if you get to 5 to 10% by volume in your soil, you really probably don't need any more than that. But if you're top dressing, you could apply it once a year, say in the fall, with a compost. And you could do that probably year after year after year if you wanted. And what that's going to do is truly improve your soil and improve it at a deeper level. You know, not just the first couple inches, but it's going to get better soil even further down. And so what you're doing is you're improving the base of your soil over time. If you have the ability and would like to go and do 6 inches deep with biochar at a 10% volume mix, that's great too. And I think that's a good way to look at it. But when we talk to people, we do say, you know, you have to realize the biochar is not going away. It's not compost. It's not, the benefits are going to be there next year. So if you have the ability to put a little bit on this year and you'll see an increase and a benefit, then maybe if you want to wait a couple years, do it again. You know, it's still there. It's now a couple inches deep, but it's still there, and it's going to continue to improve. And there's been a lot of research that shows that the benefits actually increase over time. Hmm. So the cation exchange capacity of the biochar increases, which is its ability to deal with the minerals in the soil and stuff. It helps out better over time. It actually gets more oxygenated, which allows it to have more oxygen for the soil and stuff like that. So. Hmm.
By the way, how do you determine the proportion? You were kind of talking about how some proportion of original soil to the biochar is optimal or preferable, but how do you know what your proportion is?
You know, thankfully, there's been a number of universities that have done research on that. And we've had, for us specifically, University of Florida, Kentucky State University, University of Missouri, and a number of other universities have looked at biochar. I think Michigan actually recently did some work with it. And they're testing to see what's the optimal amount of biochar for growing crops and growing tomatoes and growing grass and looking at it. And so we have a body of data to refer to versus me just saying, you know, I put a box in my raised bed garden and it did great. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing more scientific backing, and that's very helpful, because one thing we don't want people to think of this is some sort of magical, you know, snake oil. It's not. It's something that's been around and it's being tested on a global scale, and it's doing well.
Yeah. Nan, do you have any questions you wanted to finish up with?
I'd like you to talk a little bit about that beautiful green rectangle that you created.
So like I said earlier, I'm from Riverside, Illinois, and if people are familiar with Riverside, it's actually an arboretum. And it is really a neat village outside of, right next to the Brookfield Zoo. But in general, the village has the Parks and Rec Department. They like to mow, and they'll core aerate the fields for the kids to play Little League and soccer. I happen to have 4 children, so we use these fields quite a bit. And so a number of years ago, I said, you know, would you mind putting biochar on the fields to show or to help improve the grass and less compacted? It's safer for the kids, and it's better grass. And they said no. I was like, okay, well, how about if I do a test plot? I'll do where the kids play soccer, the little guys play soccer. I'll do a couple fields just with biochar and some compost, and we'll just see how it goes over a couple years. And so we did that. And they let me do that, which I really appreciated. And I have a drone that I took up, and I took pictures. And what we found is that after 2 years, and all we did was the applications, and it was in 2015, when we did the application, 2017, I took a drone up, and those squares, those rectangular fields were just a nice solid green compared to the grass that was around it. And so even 2 years later, the biochar that we just top dressed, we didn't till it in, we didn't plant, we just top dressed it, made an impact. Hmm. And you could see it visibly from the air.
And on your flyer, you have a color photograph, aerial photograph that shows it. It's unmistakable. There's no denying it.
Yeah.
Are there particular kinds of soil that especially benefit from biochar? I mean, a clay soil versus a sandy soil, or is it, in a sense, equally beneficial to any type of soil?
So it impacts them all differently. I will say, if you have a soil that's a little bit too acidic, biochar has a slightly basic or alkaline capacity, so it will raise the pH of your soil, so you might get it to a pH that's more suitable for plant growth. And then also for sandy soils, it has traditionally been extremely well received. So if you have a little bit too much sand and you need that, because that's going to hold those nutrients in. Clay soils, it will help. It's not going to hold water as much as clay. So it's going to allow that water to kind of get through versus sand, where it's actually going to hold the water to help it out. It's the opposite. It's kind of that middle ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. If people want more information about biochar, and specifically Wakefield Biochar, I assume that you have a website.
We do. WakefieldBiochar.com.
Oh, imagine that. So Wakefield, as in awakening a field to its greater growth. So WakefieldBiochar.com, and biochar is pretty much as it sounds, B-I-O-C-H-A-R, one word. So right. WakefieldBiochar.com. And Tom Marrero with his twin brother, co-owner of Wakefield Biochar. Tom, this has been a really illuminating conversation, and I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to have you here on the morning show. I'm so glad Nan issued the invitation and that you accepted. It was great to talk with you, and we appreciate you educating us on the wonderful world of biochar on today's morning show.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you here. Nan, before we let you go, what are some other things going on we want people to know about?
My goodness, there's a lot going on. This Saturday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m., you can come and celebrate Earth Day at the Kenosha Gateway Campus. You have no idea how many things are going to be going on. There's tree climbing arborist style, so you actually get to get in the harness, and they'll show kids how to climb a tree. There's beekeeping, Ehrman Farm Lab, horse and wagon rides, free trees. They're giving away oak saplings. There's a Pike Creek cleanup between 8:45 and 10 a.m., electronics recycling. There's free compost. There will be a sister event at the Elkhorn campus of Gateway with equally as many but differing vendors and activities. It's really a fun event in both places. Come out with a whole family. You will not be disappointed. Of course, Root Pike Watershed Initiative will be there at the Kenosha campus doing all our cool things, including the poop toss game and Sparkles, our water spaniel mascot. The Racine Eco Justice Center is having a beginning birding session with the fabulous Rick Fair Saturday, April 27th from 9:30 until 11:30. Rick's presentation will cover bird identification tips, morphology, bird behavior with a focus on migration. He'll also cover binocular basics, recommending birding resources and the best birding spots in Racine and Kenosha, and the fee is $5. Next, Hawthorne Hollow will have a garlic mustard pull party and luncheon Saturday, May 4th from 9 a.m. to noon. After you pull garlic mustard, you're going to be hungry, so they'll be feeding you lunch, and a variety of dishes will be made with the dreaded garlic mustard. You can contact Lori Artiomo at Lori, that's L-O-R-I, at hawthornhollow.org. And the Caledonia Conservancy will have a spring native plant walk at Tabor Woods. It will be led by the amazing Kay McClelland. You'll meet at 5131 Tabor Road on Saturday, May 11th from 10 until 12. That's not all, but that's all we have time for.
Well, that is quite an impressive list.
Yes.
And so thank you, Nan, for
You're
spreading
welcome.
The word on all of these great events. And happy Earth Day to you
yes,
and to
thank
Tom
you.
And to all of our listeners. Tomorrow on the morning show, we will be celebrating an anniversary, the 150th anniversary of a women's organization known as PEO, the Philanthropic Educational Organization. They were founded 150 years ago by six young women in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, who wanted to do something to help other women receive a meaningful education and be able to pursue their dreams in exciting fashion. And 150 years later, PEO is still with us with 6,000 chapters across the country. And we talk with two local members of PEO on tomorrow's morning show. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived at WGTD.org. And the morning show is now available to you as a podcast. You can subscribe via Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Support for the morning show also comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering an online master's degree in healthcare administration. Learn the skills necessary to be a leader in the complicated healthcare world. Details are available to you at uwp.edu. This is WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio, as we approach 9 o'clock.